In Dublin itself, the young soldiers at the barracks found themselves policing a restive population without training or guidance. Another boy soldier, Sean Sullivan, a sergeant major at only 16 years and 10 months, died in a scuffle while trying to clear a street in the north inner city. The crowd, the Irish Times reported, used insulting language to the officer. He fired a shot over their heads, only for it to ricochet back off the roof and kill young Sullivan. And all the time, menacing the raw, nervy young men, was the threat of attack. Most days, the troops in Dublin were ambushed by a sudden volley of shots or a grenade thrown at a passing lorry. In one incident, a troop lorry heading back to Wellington Barracks was ambushed at Curzon Street, across the road from the main gate. A grenade flew through the air, only to miss the troops and land in Williams' newsagents. Maureen Carroll, a little girl of only 7, died in the explosion. The soldiers bundled out of their lorry and chased the ambushers down the maze of red brick streets. They caught them on Kevin Street. The troops claimed that the two, Sean McAvoy and John Hardwood, tried to bolt. Perhaps they did. Perhaps the soldiers wanted revenge for the attack. Either way, both men were shot in the back. The ambushers, like the soldiers, were not yet out of their teens. Both were 19. This was a feature of the Irish Civil War, this cruel fratricidal conflict. Irishmen, it is often said, were killing Irishmen. In fact, boys were killing boys. What was more, the longer the killing dragged on, the more it took on the quality of a vendetta. Eye for an eye and tooth for tooth.
Ultimately, any civil war is going to have a nasty side because there's an emotional element. You have people that know each other. It's like when it's like a nasty row. We're coming up to Christmas now. People will have nasty rows on Christmas Day because with your family you will be less censored if, how you were going to prosecute that war without nastiness, without people wanting to settle old scores. That wasn't going to happen. Then there was another side to it. Even if you were to be objective and detached, the fact that the Republicans were going to try and prosecute guerrilla warfare, the Free State side realised. They knew that the things that had worked and hadn't worked when the British were trying to contain them. So they had that advantage. So they were able to apply things that they knew would terrorise guerrilla fighters in the Republican side.
Well, they were very brutal methods. They set up what was called the CID, the Criminal Investigation Department, in Oriel House, which still stands at the top of Western Row there, corner of Western Row and Fenian Street. And that was originally set up by Collins, but it developed into what Republicans called a murder gang, a death squad, if you like, in more modern terms. And they arrested Republicans and took them to the outskirts of the city in a number of cases where they were executed.
Effectively, Collins' squad, who were became euphemistically known as the Criminal Investigation Department, mm-hmm. and what they, you know, despite the name, they were effectively a paramilitary force tasked to carrying out intelligence gathering, interrogations, and are depending, including aspects of torture and assassinations. And the, you know, if you look at counterinsurgency down through the years, there will always be units like that. The important thing is how they're used, that the leadership use them with a degree of restraint and surgical precision. And these guys were not used in that fashion, and they were let off the lead an awful lot. They were Ireland's own equivalent of Black and Tans.
Wellington Barracks itself housed the Army's intelligence department, led by a man named Charlie Dalton. Dalton had been an assassin for Michael Collins in the struggle against the British. Now he used the same methods to terrorise anti-treaty IRA guerrillas in Dublin. His men raided houses used by Republican suspects and brought them back for interrogation to Wellington Barracks. 140 prisoners were held behind barbed wire in the barracks, and disturbing stories soon emerged of the treatment they had received. On Saturday, September 30th, an urgent request was sent to nearby Mount Argus Church for a priest to see a prisoner, Fergus Murphy. He had been wounded in the head. The priest, Ciarán Farrelly, raced to the barracks, but the troops there told him, "It's nothing, a minor scalp wound." Unconvinced, he went looking for Murphy among the prisoners. Standing at the barbed wire, he found him. As he drew near, I had a sickening feeling, because I had never before seen a man after torture. His head, from the eyes and ears upwards, was heavily bandaged. His eyes were blacked and twitching with pain. His face, on both sides of the nose, was also black. His right cheek was terribly swollen. I asked him what had happened to him. He motioned to the intelligence department and said, "They took me down there last night and left me as you see me."
Some of those who were taken to Wellington never came back at all. On October the 6th, 1922, Charlie Dalton and his men arrested three youths in Drumcondra, putting up Republican posters, and brought them to Wellington Barracks for questioning. They were interrogated by officers there and then discharged. The following day, their bodies were found at the Red Cow in Clondalkin, shot in the head. Edwin Hughes and Brendan Holohan were 17. Their friend, Joseph Rogers, was a year younger. An inquest was held the following month. Prosecution asked for a verdict of murder to be brought against Dalton. The jury, perhaps afraid of crossing the army, declined.